This is Srinivas Rao, the host of the Vistage podcast. Today I'm speaking with Tad Walbauer. Tad currently serves as First Vice President of Investments at UBS Financial Services and is a partner in the Amada Walbauer Group, which focuses on assisting their clients to become financially independent without ever having to sell their companies. Tad, thanks so much for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with the Vistage listeners this morning.
My pleasure.
So, Tad, I own a family business. What's the best way for me to select the family member to take over running the company?
Well, that's probably the trickiest, the most difficult of all questions parents ask as they start to evaluate how they want their companies to continue into the future. So I get a lot of those questions, and I think quite honestly, when a parent takes a step back and just thinks about it as though perhaps they weren't their children, it gets a little bit easier. What I mean by that is, first of all, determine who are the most capable of the family members that you would entrust the most, and then ask them if they would be interested in a career of running the company and in the leadership role. And if after that process happens, I think the next thing that I would recommend to them is to explain what the goal and what the process is as they start to determine a fair process to find a successor and a future leadership. The next step, what are the action steps that would best suit the business, is clearly to put each of the individuals that are interested and capable in positions of authority and responsibility and put a defined timeline to it. So, for example, you might have a son that's out in the warehouse or on the factory floor and a daughter that might be in the office in a bookkeeping responsibility. Well, give them a timeline in a number of different positions that give a full experience across the broad spectrum of responsibilities within the company. And over a period of time, whether it's 2 years or 5 years, start to really test each of those family members to see how they do in a variety of responsibilities and evaluate them like you would any other employee. How did they do at the end of their 1 year running the factory or running the office or running the sales department, or being the chief financial officer? And then once you complete the rotation of the varied responsibilities within a defined period of time, you make an objective decision based on their performance and announce it to the family, explain it to the family, and then announce it to the entire organization. So that way it's critical that the entire organization gives this the buy-in. Otherwise, whoever is selected typically isn't destined for success. You want everybody on board when that decision's finally made. So, again, keep it objective, keep it clear, keep a defined timeline, and, you know, usually that's a process that works pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing that I'm getting from you is that it's really necessary to kind of have somebody perform in multiple roles to determine their capability of running the company, because it is much more than doing what they do best at the current time.
Well, no different than if any of us went out and worked for a company and they were starting to select their future leaders. What would they do? Many times you start at headquarters, then they move you out to different regions, different divisions around the country, around the globe, in a variety of responsibilities, then bring you back to headquarters. And, you know, like any public company, that's pretty much the succession process, and it works pretty well there. So really no different here. You're talking about people, you're talking about capabilities, and really making sure that they can have the skill set and the experience in all the areas that are important to the success of the company.
Now, one question for you. Do you think there are times where it's going to be appropriate to select somebody who's not a family member? And if you choose to go down that route, how do you handle that in a way that doesn't really rock the boat with the family?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and that's not a unique one, because many times the most capable is outside the company. So you really have two ways to look at this. One is ownership, and two is leadership. So just had a client went through this, where the third generation, there was a son and a daughter running the company, and they did not go through the process I just outlined. They were just really anointed, and after 4 years, it was determined that she should not be a part of the company. So the board of directors, which was primarily family members, voted to extricate her from the company. That said, she's still a 25% owner. Mm-hmm. So she gets distributions each year as a 25% owner. What she does not get is a salary. So to answer your question, I think if you find someone outside the family who you think is better suited, to present it to the family and say, here is the individual who I think best ensures the future success of our company. I will transition or sell ownership interest to the family members. So you will still be invested in the company. And if we think the company is going to go to greater success with this individual, it's probably a better financial decision for all involved. So while they might not welcome and embrace that, if it's to the best interest of the business, it's most likely to their best interest.
Well, I think that makes a perfect transition to the next question, which is talking about the various ownership options in getting the company's ownership to your kids. What kinds of options are available to you in that situation?
Well, again, a great question. I think one most parents wrestle with. And the first thing we ask them is, how do you envision it? Do you envision gifting them the ownership? And if so, can you afford to do that? Or do you need to sell the business to them? And at what price? Is it at market price? Is it at a family discounted price? So let's kind of break that into two categories here. Let's talk about the gifting. If the parents are financially independent and don't need proceeds, particularly from the sale of the company, and they choose to gift it, there's a number of ways to do it. And actually, this is good timing because it's what's called the Uniform Gift Credit, and that's an allowance that the federal government allows every American to pass along. It's an asset value that you can pass along tax-free. As of today, it's $5.12 million per person. As of January 1st, given the turmoil in Washington, that reverts to $1 million. But let's go with today's number. Let's say you've got a business and it's worth $20 million, and the dad owns it, and let's say the mom has really had nothing to do with it, and they decide that they want to transfer the ownership, gift the ownership to their children. The father could gift up to $5 million of ownership to the wife. Now he owns $15 million and she owns $5 million, and they could each gift up to $5 million to their children. So $10 million or 50% of the ownership of a company could be gifted without any tax implications. Now again, January 1st of 2013, that changes, reverts back to $1 million. In addition, all Americans under the same gift credit laws could gift up to $13,000 a year to anyone they want. So in essence, today, parents could gift up to $10 million under the Uniform Gift Credit and then another $13,000 per parent per child. So if you do that over a period of time, you can really gift a fair amount of ownership away if that's the better choice. Now, if they decide to sell it, that's a different story. Do they want to sell it now so that they have income for the rest of their life, or do they want to sell it at the time of death? If they want to sell it now and have income for the rest of their life, one of the ways to do that is just a long-term note or a cash payment if they can borrow versus the bank, or they could do what's called a self-canceling note. Now, a long-term note is, let's just say it's a 20-year note at $1 million total purchase price, and you amortize that out over 20 years with a rate of interest just like a mortgage. That's one way to do it. The second way is the self-canceling note, and that's interesting because if you sell an asset with a self-canceling note at your time of death, that note expires, and it's not part of your estate. So for certain people, that might make sense. Now, if you decide that you want to, if the parent wants to retain ownership until their last days, they could have a buy-sell agreement in place with their child or children, and there could be life insurance that is at an equal value to the company. So upon the death of the owner of the company, the successors are already named, in this case family members, to take over, and the death benefit of the life insurance policy could then pay the estate the value of that company. So depending on what the priorities are here within the family, gift it, sell it, there's a number of different ways to accomplish both.
Mm-hmm. So how can I protect my net worth through the ups and downs of my business profitability?
Well, you know, I think since 2008 and all of the volatility that we've had in really all industry and all markets since then, it certainly has given people a wake-up call. And they might have had a business for 30 years, and they think that, you know, every day is going to be a little better than the last. And the wake-up call is that might not be the case. So one of the things that we try to emphasize with folks is build your net worth separate and in addition to the equity in the company, as opposed to plowing back the profits each and every year into the company and taking little in distributions. You might want to rethink that and start to diversify your holdings. For example, if you are a service company and you work out of an office park, perhaps you might want to take some of the profits over a period of time and buy the building that you operate out of, or the factory, or the warehouse, whatever that is. So to diversify your net worth into some real estate that you're paying yourself rent offers some terrific flexibility. Another option that we have found very tax efficient is a profit sharing plan. And much like a 401k plan, a profit sharing plan is where the owners decide that they want to share in some of the profits of the company with their employees, but the economic benefit to them is really pretty terrific. Right now, an owner can have a contribution to a profit-sharing plan of $50,000 a year. In 2013, that goes up to $51,000 a year. It's tax-deductible to the company. It grows tax-deferred in an account for the business owner. And also a nice feature is it's protected from creditors. So if you've got banknotes and you're signing personal guarantees, your 401k funds and profit-sharing funds are held away from those creditors. And the last piece that is for a certain type of company, typically a smaller company, not a lot of employees, are the pension plans. And those pension plans, a business owner can contribute up to $150,000 a year into that and, again, get a full tax deduction for the company. So between the real estate and the profit sharing and pension plans, there are some very tax efficient ways to diversify your one's net worth.
Excellent. So one final question for you. How can I make sure that if I'm disabled or die that my family is taken care of?
Well, I think that's everybody's risk and one that's certainly underestimated. My goodness, every day you can read in a paper about some unfortunate accident that happens to someone, and obviously nobody could have ever predicted it. So for a business owner, that could be tragic for a number of reasons. One is income is now at risk, and secondly, the value of the company is at risk, because many companies, if it's arguably worth $1 million today, and then you have an owner who's disabled or deceased, a buyer would in no manner agree to $1 million market value, because without the owner, it would be, in most cases, discounted and discounted heavily. So really, a couple of the best ways to protect yourself against disability or death is go back to that buy-sell agreement. Now, whether you have a family member or you have a partner, or even just a significant, a very important key employee within the organization, to have a buy-sell agreement in place is real important. Because if you think about it, if the owner is the only family member there, and the priority is to get the value of that company to the family in the case of their death, really life insurance is the most efficient way to do that. So if you have a buy-sell agreement in place, and we're doing this with one of our clients right now where it's a healthcare facility, and there are no family members or next generation coming in. The owner is 56 years of age, but the value of that company he would want to get to his young adult children. So he is speaking to his key employee, who I don't think has ever thought of herself in an ownership interest, and basically saying, I want to have a buy-sell agreement in place. I want to take out a life insurance policy on myself that you technically would own, and the premiums get paid each year. They can negotiate who pays the premiums. But if he had an unfortunate and untimely death, there would be a death benefit paid to his estate that would buy the company, and then she would own the company. She could continue to run it. She could sell it on her own. She would have flexibility on what to do with it because, in essence, it would be hers. So that's one way to protect yourself against an untimely death. The other one, which many times can be even worse, is disability. Because with disability, typically, if you're fully disabled and cannot manage and run the company, now you need someone else that can do it. So disability insurance is the obvious measure, first step, to make sure that you replace as much of your income as you can in the case that you can't work. But again, the buy-sell agreement would be a document that we would certainly encourage a business owner to have to state with whether it's a family member or another key employee that if they are in fact disabled for a year or longer, whatever the appropriate amount of time is, that the key employee would be responsible for running the company and responsible for continuing an income stream for the owner who's disabled. So those are a couple of the recommendations that we would have that are the quick and easy ones. And obviously the other one is back to how do you protect your net worth? Well, if along the way you started to own some of the real estate and have it as income producing, and if along the way you were able to sock a few dollars away into a profit-sharing plan, if you were disabled, then you would have access to income out of both of those vehicles as well. So there's a multitude of ways to do it, and it's a great question because many business owners are really lax on this because, quite honestly, who wants to think about their own invincibility, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, Ted, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about where we can learn more about the work that you do?
Well, we have information that's on the Vistage site. We are also active in meeting with the Vistage groups around the country and to speak to them on a group basis. Or we get plenty of calls from the folks that we've already made presentations to and just act as a sounding board. So the relationship can be as informal as a call or it can be as formal as developing a more professional relationship. Whatever is appropriate for the interested party.
Excellent. Well, Ted, thanks so much for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with the Vistage listeners. This has been Srinivas Rao, the host of the Vistage podcast. And until next time, good luck with your business.